Now, when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, good morning, good evening, good night, everybody all over the world, wherever you may be listening to Blood River Radio. I thank you so much for tuning in tonight. It is December the 12th in the year of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, 2020. Jesus Christ, people, the only name under heaven in which men may be saved. That's true. Any people out there who have become Christians yet, my prayer tonight will be for you to convert over before it's too late. Anyway, like I said, it is December the 12th, and this month is really winding down. Me and Sam have been on the hour for about a half hour talking back and forth. I got to tell you this quick story before we go to the prayer. I recommend any of you people, if you've been working too long, like we tend to do here, Liberty News or Blood River, take a vacation. I was gone all last week. I went over to the wilds of Tennessee, surrounded on all four sides. That's right, all four sides. Our little hunting camp's right in the middle of thousands of acres of land. Listen, I killed a big old nice 8-point buck. First day there, 5 minutes out in the woods, killed, nailed him. Saw one bigger than that. We saw turkey. I saw about 25 turkeys. Saw geese, squirrels. I mean, rabbit, you name it. And it just, we cooked out at night on an open fire. It just cleared my mind. It made me feel so much better. So I'm just really ready to rip and roll tonight. And we've got one heck of a show. But I'm gonna say the prayer, and then we're going to wave our fabulous guest in, one of my brothers. He's going to run the show tonight. But anyway, people, you will bow your heads because we're going to say a quick prayer. Oh, Lord, almighty God, almighty Father, maker of heaven and earth, maker of all things seen and unseen, oh, Lord, you who just spoke the world into existence. If you will, Lord, look down upon this world, which is totally messed up right now. Lord, you know we don't have to tell you anything that you don't know. Nothing of this is taking you by surprise, Lord. You know that the Luciferian communist Satanists are trying to take us over. And, Lord, it looks like they're making great headway. So if you will, Lord, keep us, especially Blood River Liberty News, all of our family, all of our guests and friends, keep us straight. Keep us pure enough, at least pure enough, where we can carry on and try to do your work, Lord. And everything we accomplish, Lord, we will give it to your glory. I ask all this in Jesus' name, amen. And I'd like to mention a name or two. We have a great brother and a friend. He was a combat veteran in Vietnam, up close and personal with an enemy over there, wounded in action. His name is Jim. He lives in Arizona. And I was talking to him while I listened to a voicemail. I'm going to try to call Jim tomorrow. He's in the hospital. He said he's going to be in there about 2 months. They've diagnosed him having the coronavirus, of all things. But listen, you will, people, pray for Jim in Arizona. You don't have to know his last name because God knows his last name. But anyway, people, let me just give you a quick outline before we bring the guest on. We're going to talk about Ursula Haverbeck, 92-year-old German lady who's being persecuted by the German government. But the Zio government, for the mere, well, I'll let our guest tell you the rest of the story when she comes on. But anyway, in the second hour, I called Peter Scoop Stanton to call me today. As you may know, he lives up there just on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., and they're having a great rally up there in support of President Trump. He's going to call in sometime in the second hour for, I think, probably the last segment, just to fill us in on how that protest. Oh, wow. Sam just said that the BLM and Antifa have already attacked some of the peaceful protesters some in, up there in that movement. So we'll have Peter Scoop Stanton, one of our great brothers. God, he's been with the radio. Me and Pete, we don't come on 15 years ago. We'll cover that a little bit in the second hour. We'll also cover the presidential election fraud and the crisis that's perpetrated and any solutions that there is. But right now, we're going to bring on my brother in arms, Gene Andrews. How are you doing tonight, Gene?
Doing very well, Mr. Eddie. How are you getting along, sir?
Well, since I heard your voice, I'm all better because I was just telling Peter Scoop what I do. I bring the best talent money can buy. Well, money ain't the best talent available.
Your check is in the mail. How many times have I heard that one?
Well, keep waiting. Have faith in it. Just have faith, my brother. Anyway, we got the. That's for sure. Well, Gene's going to run this interview tonight. Okay, you know, we have Miss Monica Braveheart Schaefer coming in tonight, and she's going to discuss Ursula Haverback that I just got through telling you about, and all of the things she wants to talk about. And Gene has read that article, and Gene is the more, I don't know if I should say this, it might give us away. Me and Gene put both of our intellects together, and we'd come close to normal. But anyway, Gene's a hell of a lot smarter than I am. You know, me and James used to put our vocabulary together, all 50 words of our vocabulary, trying to match, Winston Smith. Yeah, that's right. Hey, if me and Gene put all of our cards together, it would be almost 52 cards, maybe almost the whole deck. Anyway, we got Miss Monica Braveheart Schaefer hanging on. How are you doing, Miss Monica Braveheart?
I'm doing just great. Thanks so much. I've got a big smile on my face just even starting with the remark about, you know, sending the check in the mail. Makes me think, yeah, we do these.
Yes.
But we could make a point with that, you know.
Well, it got lost in all the fake ballots. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. It just it's in that truck with another 3 million fake ballots coming in.
I tell you what, we'll have to get a government employee to sort through all that. But Miss Monica, you heard me give the introduction. Tell the audience briefly what you're going to talk about tonight. And Gene knows. Gene is going to run this interview. I'm just going to bring y'all in and out of the breaks because I'm the dumbest of the three. So anyway, y'all tell the audience, Miss Monica, tell them what we're going to talk about.
Ursula Haverbeck. She's a German lady of 92 years, and she is one of the most heroic and wonderful, dignified, beautiful women that I can think of, really a hero of our times. And she has been persecuted for years and years and years. They just released her from jail. She did a 2.5-year jail term. This is all for questioning the official story about World War II, the so-called alleged gas chambers, you know, the Holocaust. And she has questioned that. And for those inconvenient questions, she was, like I say, persecuted for many years, in and out of the courts on multiple trials. Finally, they did jail her. She's been released, but she went right back into the Inquisition, I'll call it, because there's more charges against her. They're not new, I don't think. I think these, you know, she had multiple charges against her all along, so she's still up against that. And they then, okay, so 12 days after she got out, so she got out November 5th, November 17th, she was in court again in Berlin, and then on December 4th, they did the sentencing and found her guilty of a, you know, thought and speech crime and sentenced her to a year in prison. Now, many people thought then that she's right back in prison. No, this is the what they call the first, you know, first instance, or in German, that's how they put it, but the first level of court. So that'll go through appeal process. But still, you know, she will be hounded to her grave on this, and she stands up to it. You know, she could easily rest on her laurels and just say, look, I don't want anything to do with this anymore. Just leave me in peace. But no, she still speaks eloquently and is completely lucid of mind, clear of mind, and is facing all these trials and inquisitions. And you know, they will not leave her alone. That's the way it is. But she is the way I see it, if you are on the side of truth, then you are also at peace with that. That's how I feel. I see it in her face. I see it in her demeanor. And I really believe that that is how she is feeling as well. So that's, in a nutshell, what's going on. But I can, of course, give you lots more detail. Yeah, where would you like to go from here?
Well, Ms. Schaefer, this is Gene Andrews. I would like to, if it's all right with you, start in on this article that appeared in the Barnes Review in the November-December 2020 issue of the Barnes Review. It's a journal of politically incorrect history, and it's a fascinating article, but at the same time, it's one of the most frustrating stories that our listeners could ever read or hear. That this would go on in the free Western society and not in North Korea or in communist China is just absolutely amazing. Not amazing so much as it's frustrating. Now, just to get some background information, you are a Canadian citizen. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm a Canadian. I was born and raised in Canada. I am fully a Canadian citizen of German heritage. My parents immigrated to Canada from Germany in the early 1950s before I was born.
Yes, ma'am. And you were making a holiday trip to Germany in 2017. Now, you were not going there as an activist. You were not going there as a terrorist. You weren't going to blow up anything.
Just going for brother, a vacation, have to go to
but
a
we'll
quick
pick
break.
It up after the break.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, people. Dear Blood River Radio family, hold on. As soon as we come out of the break, we're going to go right back to Gene, and he's going to finish his dissertation, and then we'll go back to Miss Monica. Hold on.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear family, thank you for tuning in. It's going to be your lucky day for tuning in to listen to this great interview we have. And without further ado, I'll just tell you, we have Miss Monica Schaefer, the political prisoner. She was in prison in Germany, in case you just tuned in. She's going to be participating with Gene Andrews. Gene Andrews is going to finish this interview with her, and I think he was talking about her great article in Barnes Review. Back to you, Gene. Carry on, fella.
Yes, sir. We were talking about that. This young lady, fantastic person. I am so honored to just be on the same program with her. I look up to her for her courage and determination. And we have, Eddie, you and I know this, we have a lot of people we know say, well, they're not going to do that to me over here. You know, Sleepy Joe Biden, he's a fraudulent president there. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But when they throw the cuffs on you outside of a courtroom when you did absolutely nothing and haul you to jail, I wonder how tough some of these macho men are going to be. And this lady, Monica Schaefer, stood up to him, never backed down, didn't go whining and crying about, you know, let me out, I'll say anything if you let me out. She is a person of immense character and courage. And you're so lucky, amen, Eddie, to have her on your program tonight. But we'll get back to what we were talking about. So, Ms. Schaefer, you were going to Germany in 2017 for a vacation, holiday trip, going to visit your brother Alfred. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And first of all, thank you so much for those kind words, Gene. That's really, I don't think I'm deserving of all those kind words. You know, things kind of just happen, and then
well,
you deal
with
it.
Well, they do, but,
you know.
Things happen, but the character of a person comes to the forefront in how they react to those things that happen.
Yeah, thank you so much. And my brother Alfred, I have to say, he is absolutely like my rock. You know, he has been such an inspiration. And basically, we make a team, the two of us. I think we boost each other and give each other strength. And he says that, he expresses that in his letters as well. You know, being very, very happy to have me as a sister and vice versa, you see. So I think that we boost each other. It's not just one plus one. It's kind of a multiplication thing, you know.
Absolutely. One and one equals three in your case. So, got you in hot water with the wonderful, you know, Democratic government here, you went just as an observer. Not as a witness or not as a defense attorney or anything. You went trial of Sylvia Stoltz. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And Sylvia Stoltz, do you want me to explain a little bit about
was
about?
Yes,
ma'am. So Sylvia Stoltz, actually, she just got re-released out of jail now very recently, too, in November. And she's been in prison twice now. She is a lawyer. She was Ernst Zundel's attorney back in 2006, 2007, around there, and did her job too well, ended up in jail because she was bringing evidence into the court. And in Germany, it truly is Orwellian. It is truly beyond the imagination. Most people can never believe that this goes on in a so-called Western democratic country, but you're not allowed to bring evidence. And that's why I will talk about this, because it relates to our trial as well, and it relates to Ursula Haverbeck, who we mentioned in the first quarter there, that you are not permitted to bring evidence that support your conclusions that you have reached into the German court of law when it comes to this singular event called the Holocaust. It is utterly illegal, shall we say, and the judge, you know, told her, you better be quiet, that you cannot say those things. She carried on saying those things, and they physically carried her out back then. Then, you know, she went through her own trial. She was imprisoned, and then after she got out, she made a speech about it and told about this situation in Switzerland. Then she was on trial for that speech, and that's when I happened to enter the picture in 2018, January 3rd, 2018. And you're right, I went over for a holiday over the Christmas period to visit with my brother, found out that Sylvia Stoltz, one of her trial days was on January 3rd in Munich, which was not that far from where Alfred lives. And so we went to that trial just as a public, you know, observer, just in the public gallery. Well, I guess they spotted me, and I didn't actually know that they had a file open on me. You see, that stems back to my relatives, cousins of mine, who, when I made the video in 2016, we had visited them for coffee and cake and showed them the video just a few days after we produced it, and they went utterly ballistic when it came to the part in the video, and I'll just name the video for your listener. It's called Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust. You can still find it. Of course, it's been scrubbed off of my brother's YouTube channel, but you can still find it if you put that in. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. And it's only 6 minutes long, but it really hit a nerve with the tribe that we're not allowed to criticize, lest we be called anti-Semitic. Anyway, when my cousins saw that, when it came to the part where I said, these things did not happen, and I was referring to, you know, the horrors that I had learned about as a teenager and reprimanded my mother about back then, and this is what the apology is about. I'm apologizing to my mother for reprimanding her for not stopping these horrors. And then I say, well, now I know why she said she didn't know about these things, because that's exactly what she told me at the time. She just said, I didn't know. We didn't know about these things. And now I know why they didn't know, is because they didn't happen. These things did not happen. And at that point, my cousins, you know, just leapt out of their chairs and started screaming at us and get out, get out, get out. And you're making Germany bad again. That's their take on it. And these are good people. These are very lovely, beautiful, well-meaning, intelligent people, my cousins. But they have been re-educated. And I did talk about that in the article in the Barnes Review.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, yeah. So
that was so shocking that your relatives turned you in. And
they did, but they didn't tell me that, you see. And I also didn't get a letter from the authorities in Germany saying, gee, you better be careful. We've got a file on you.
Yeah.
So I guess they spotted me. I guess I, you know, I'm easily identifiable. I show my face. Not like nowadays, everybody with masks on anyway. This is bizarre anyway, isn't it? That it used to be that you weren't allowed in a store with a mask on or into a bank. Now you're not allowed in without a mask.
Well, we have a joke over here that a man came into a bank with a mask on and gave the teller a note, said, this is a robbery. Give me all the cash in your cash drawer. And the teller says, oh, thank goodness. I was afraid it was the virus. Do you want 10s or 20s? So,
wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
No, but that was the thing that shocked me. Your own relatives would do this to you. I mean, it's the mindset that, it just like you said, these people have been so brainwashed.
Yes.
That they would turn in a relative of theirs for doing nothing. I mean, you weren't going over there trying to start a revolution or attack people or burn synagogues or anything like that. And
that's
the mindset
right.
They have, it's okay for immigrant to bring in hordes and hordes of these immigrant terrorists into Germany and into Western Europe, but to question the Holocaust, that's verboten. Can't do that right there. It's just,
yeah,
it's hard
you
to
know,
believe.
With the re-education of the Germans, and they really, really did it the most in Germany. I mean, we've all suffered from this, you know, mind contamination from all these lies, toxic lies for generations. But they got it the most acutely because they are really at the center of Europe and they are the center of the target. And, of course, the target encompasses all of us. The white race is what I'm talking about. And so the guilt cult plays into the... with the lies, so combined with the lies about what the Germans supposedly did, and now the guilt calls, they don't see it that way. That, like, they see all these people coming in as all these poor people, and we have to help them out, because really it's our fault that even if they do crimes against us, that's our fault too, because we've been oppressing them, and so, you know, we really just have to help them all along the way. So what in a nutshell, how they felt about it is that Germany was bad, and now Germany is good, and you are making Germany bad again, you see. So, and when they think Germany is now good, that is all about taking in all those rapefugees, I will call them. You know, there are some legitimate refugees, of course there are, but for the most part, it is a planned genocidal invasion of people from other countries, third world countries, from Africa, and they are being pushed in with money that is, you know, George Soros type money, and, you know, he is a Hungarian Jew.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's where that comes from. So, and I hear the music.
Well, I'm glad you heard it. People will be right back. We're going to continue this fascinating interview. Gene is right. I am so fortunate to have this lady on our show, and as well as fortunate to have Gene as a brother. Be right back.
Oh, listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The FDA has approved the Pfizer vaccine, and a rollout of the vaccine is expected to happen within 24 hours. Dr. Nicole Sapphire says we owe a lot of credit to President Trump and Operation Warp Speed.
I don't think most people understand what an incredible scientific feat this has been. It is so multi-layered. Not only do we have a vaccine using novel technology for a disease that has been present less than a year and has a 95% efficacy, but thanks to Operation Warp Speed, is ready to be distributed and administered within 24 to 48 hours of receiving that FDA EUA.
That audio, courtesy of Fox and Friends, top congressional leaders appear to be at another standstill in the ongoing negotiations on another round of coronavirus relief. You're listening to USA Radio News.
We've all heard it. Eat healthy. But what does eating healthy mean? Sure, there are countless diets out there, but they contradict each other. Yet all experts agree we should eat a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. Whole fruits and vegetables are the perfect fuel to power the cells in your body, giving you the stamina you need to handle your day-to-day activities. And that's what Balance of Nature is. Whole fruits and vegetables delivered to you in a convenient capsule form for only 22 cents a serving. Our proprietary blend has no additives or fillers, just the full nutritional value of a variety of 31 different fruits and vegetables. Balance of Nature provides you with a natural energy boost without a caffeine crash, a 3 o'clock slump, or an early bedtime. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself by going to balanceofnature.com or by calling 1-800-246-8751 and use discount code USA.
As of Monday in New York City, takeout orders and outdoor dining will only be allowed in the city due to the fact that COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations continue to climb in the city and throughout the state of New York. Dave Portnoy is a founder of Barstool Sports. He took to Twitter and says all these lockdowns are hurting small businesses.
I can't believe in this country what I consider the most basic right of them all, the right to earn a living, the right to earn a livelihood, is now being stolen. Basic freedoms they are stealing. And I'm not overstating it. They are stealing it. And they're saying they protect us. Let us protect ourselves. You're not protecting a family that you just destroyed. There's no creativity from the government.
President Trump is in West Point, New York, taking in the Navy-Army game. It's the first time since 1943 that the game will be played at one of the service academy's home fields. USA Radio News.
Well, welcome back, dear Blood River family. I'm just going to make a comment or two, and then we're going to roll right back to my fabulous guest and host. You know, Gene said a great truism when he said a lot of these tough guys, we say what we'll do, what we won't do when Biden comes to take our guns. It reminded me of an old boxing adage. I think it was Rocky Marciano said it when they asked him about his plans. One of the, when he got in the ring, one of these newscasters, he said, well, you know what? And he said, it's amazing how all your strategy and plans just evaporate when the first time you get busted right square in the face. So a lot of guys, I guarantee you, they would be there. You know, their courage, I hope not myself, would just evaporate the first time they got busted in the face with those cuffs that Gene was talking about. That is oh so true. One more thing I'll just comment on. Gene said he was really, shocked at how Monica's own family turned on her. Well, I'll never forget what Dave Gaharry, a comment he told me. He's the one that, he owns Money Tree Publishing, and he's been on our show a few times. He said, if you want to see who your enemy is, the real enemy, when you come out on your front porch in the morning and look to the left and look to the right, the people that are dwelling in those homes right next to you, those are going to be your real enemies. The great General Nick Glasnevik said, would label those people as the apparatchiks. Well, that continue on, Mr. Gene, and just continue. You're doing a great job, my brother.
With Ms. Schaefer's permission, I would like to back up in our story just a little bit. We were talking about how she went just as an observer to the trial of Sylvia Stoltz. And the reason that she was put on trial, Sylvia was, she defended Ernst Sundell. Now, she was, again, correct me, Ms. Schaefer, if I'm wrong, but she was assigned by the German judicial system or German court system as his attorney. And she defended him too strongly, and as you said, using facts. And I want to back up a little bit on that. Ernst Sundell, also living in Canada, and was also attacked physically in Canada, had his business burned because he questioned the Holocaust. And so he was living, waiting in East Tennessee, in Pigeon Forge, up in the mountains in East Tennessee, and waiting on an application to become an American citizen, he along with his wife, Ingrid. And the great government of Tennessee, and unfortunately, and my home state, is something I am very ashamed of, went storming into his house with about 30 deputies, like they were going after El Chapo or some drug lord. And this gentleman was 70 years old, busting the door down, and had this black deputy that threw him on the floor. They had one or two of these huge police dogs snapping at his face just inches away from his face. It was so ridiculous. It was like they were going after a gang of drug dealers or something along the Mexican border, and then shanghaied him out of Tennessee and sent him off to Canada to stand trial there. They threw him in a cold cell, concrete cell up there in Canada in the wintertime, hoping he would die, freeze to death. And then once he finished his sentence there, they shipped him off to Germany to stand trial again in Germany. And that's where Sylvia Stoltz became involved in this. And then after he had been deported out of Canada, shanghaied out of Canada, then the Canadian government admitted, well, maybe we overreacted. So, Ms. Schaefer, this is what's going on not only in Germany but in Canada as well, and unfortunately in Tennessee. And we have people that say, well, that could never happen here. That could never happen here. Well, it did happen here. It happened in East Tennessee, up in the mountains in East Tennessee at Pigeon Forge. So it does happen. So the people that are listening or people that hear about your story had better wake up and pay attention. Could you please go ahead for us, then?
Yes. No, thanks for all that. Just the one thing that you said about Sylvia Stoltz being assigned by the court system as one of Ernst Sundell's attorneys, I don't think that's the way it happened. I can't imagine it, although I do not know that for sure. No, I think that, you know, he had a team of lawyers. She was one of his lawyers, one of his attorneys. And yes, she did her job too well, in quotation marks, because she was defending her client, and she even spoke about that when the judge told her to shut up, said, no, I cannot. I am doing my duty and defending my client. It is my obligation and my responsibility to do it to the best of my ability, and that includes bringing evidence. And if there is evidence, this is what, you know, we bring forth. So she carried on speaking, and that's when they physically stopped her and physically carried her out. So, but going forwards now to Ernst Sundell, yes, three governments colluded to have him in a situation where they tricked him. So, and you're exactly right. They, all these people, thugs, armed thugs, I guess you call them, you know, they were police officers or whatever they were. They're in uniform, but they're armed thugs. They did come and forcibly took him away from his Tennessee home. And three governments colluded on that: Canada, Germany, and the American government. What they did, something about his passport was running out, his German passport was running out. He was a Canadian citizen. I think he still had a German. I'm not sure exactly what the status was on that, but whatever it was, there was a hearing that he missed because they did not notify him of it, something about a visa extension. Anyway, it was just some trickery that, he missed some, deadline for something, but it was something that he was not notified on purpose.
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly what happened. Exactly.
And then it this was post 9/11 by this time. Like the trials that he went through in Toronto, that was in the 80s. But by the time this was happening, it was post 9/11. All kinds of new draconian police state legislation in both your country and mine. And so when he was deported up to Canada after they tricked him and, you know, took him, kidnapped him out of his home there violently, in Canada, there was some kind of a trial where he was never given the identity of his accusers. He was held on some kind of this new legislation post 9/11 as a terrorist, or I'm not sure of the exact details, but I do know that he was not given the identity of his accusers. How can you create a defense when you don't even know who your accuser, what they were accusing you of? You see, it's all like a secret trial, and he was held for 2 years. In solitary confinement, and you're right, cold, and it was abominable conditions. Then he was deported to Germany, finally, and German government had been trying for years to get him deported. And, you know, Ernst Dundl had been fighting against that and used every avenue to fight against that. Then they finally succeeded in that, and then in Germany, that's when he was on trial, and that's when Sylvia Stoltz came into that picture. She was one of his attorneys there. Mm-hmm. And then he was sentenced to the maximum under paragraph 30 in the German criminal code, the 5 years. And I'm telling you, with speech crime criminals, or, you know, speech crime people who are incarcerated, I'm not going to use their word of criminals, but so-called, they are never let out early. He was into the very last day, whereas people who have done all kinds of other crimes, violent or otherwise, you know, if they have been behaving in prison, they generally will be let out early. But no such luck with somebody who has wrong think and wrong speak, and especially when it's this very taboo subject, the Holocaust, the so-called Jewish Holocaust of World War II.
Yes. So, thank you for giving us the background information on that. There was another revealing thing in your article that you said that after you were arrested, you were told that why would you even go back to Germany? And the ominous answer was, well, you should have thought of that before coming to Germany. It's almost like you're entering into the Twilight Zone or something, some place that's not real, but yet people go there and they just disappear into a cloud. We never see them again. It's shocking that this is going on in the 21st century, and we think we're so democratic and so progressive and so modern that these things only happen in communist China or North Korea or something like that. No, no, no. It happens in the so-called Western democracies.
That's right. What happened there is that I was protesting loudly, saying, I'm a Canadian, I'm a free woman, I am a free woman, I am Canadian, while they were arresting me, and they just kind of scoffed and said, well, you should have thought of that before you came to Germany.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I will think about that. I won't be going there. I'll guarantee you that. They'll yank me off the airplane when it hits the runway.
We got to go to a quick break, y'all. I'm really enjoying this interview, folks. I hope you are, too. We'll be right back in just a minute, people.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to let that song go a little longer if I could, but you know, I just love hearing it so much. But we got such great guests on. We just can't take up any more time. I guess I could always listen to that song after the hour. I'm just going to throw in, I'm going to go back a little bit. You know, I think it was Gene earlier. I'm backtracking a little bit. He said that Americans can't believe the kind of treatment that, going back to Ursula Haverbeck, the kind of maltreatment, malfeasance she's received at the so-called legal system in Germany. Americans can't believe that, he said. Well, I'm going to tell you what, people. If this Kamala Harris gets in office, you're going to find out. You are going to find out all this stuff that Miss Ursula Haverbeck's gone through. And it's going to be worse than that. And I'll let my people comment on that just a minute. I'd like to throw one more comment in here. I'd like to ask Miss Monica, why does the German government, why do they hate Ernst Zundel, Ursula Haverbeck? Why do they hate them so much? And how, this is a two-part question, how did the Germans, some of the greatest race on earth, how did they become so screwed up / brainwashed? Go ahead, Miss Monica.
First of all, Germany is an occupied country. They are not a sovereign nation. And even in the United Nations, you know, officialdom, you know, they don't call it a nation or a country. It's a non-governmental organizational entity for, you know, just to run the place. But the Third Reich still exists on paper. They never did sign a peace treaty. They are occupied by the victors of the war, the enemy of the German people. They are an occupied country. So when these, you know, the system hates people like Ernst Zundel and Ursula Haverbeck and Sylvia Stolz and my brother Alfred Schaefer and myself because we question their narrative. And, you know, they say the victors write the history books. And as Ursula Haverbeck says, that doesn't have anything to do with them writing the truth. So they make up their narrative, their story, and then they re-educate, a la or George Orwell style. They, you know, indoctrinate the people to believe that narrative of the victors, and thereby they keep the vanquished down. I mean, Germany is on her knees and has been for quite some time. So that is how they are managing to, you know, bring in all these invaders into Germany. And, you know, a lot of people now are waking up. I mean, I think this COVID thing if nothing else. Like my brother Alfred, he writes in his letters from prison, he says, thank you, like, I love COVID, but he doesn't really mean it in the literal sense. He just means that when people start to get uncomfortable, as in losing their jobs and this whole nonsense, lockdowns and basically a collapse of their, you know, what their lives, then they tend to wake up. And, you know, this is our only hope, really, that a critical number of people rise and wake up to what is going on. So, yeah, I'm not sure if I answered your question.
I think you did an excellent job. And I would like to ask you to go back and repeat that word for word, what you just said over the last 2 minutes, except instead of saying Germany being brainwashed and the victors writing the history of what happened to Germany and forcing the German people to be down on their knees, substitute the word Southerners in there. And the Southerners being maligned and vilified and forced to get on our knees and worship our masters in the Northeast and the Axis of Evil Empire to the North. It is very easy for me as a Southerner to have sympathy for the German people and what they went through. I've read M.S. King's book, The Bad War, and David Irving, Hitler's War. That is totally different from what we were taught in school. And
absolutely.
And when you read what the German officers and political leaders actually said, not what we said they said, but what they actually said, it is an eye-opener, to say the least. And that doesn't mean I'm turning against. I had two uncles that fought in the European War, and they thought, I'm sure they were doing the right thing at the time. But when you look at that, and it's almost like me going back and saying to them, you were lied to, and you risked your life on Roosevelt's lie. My generation was lied to, and we were sent into Vietnam on a lie about the Gulf of Tonkin, which really didn't happen. And once again, the good old U.S. of A. lied us into another war and risked our lives in a lie. And I've tried to tell my friends about these books and about, you know, victors write the history, and it's not always a true history. And they say, well, how can you say that? How can you say that? And I turn back to them and I say, hey, you're a Southerner. They've been lying about us for 160 years. You, above all people, ought to understand what happens to a side that loses in a war and how they've been vilified we've been vilified for 160 years. The same thing's happened and is happening to the German people.
Yes.
You know, Gene, I'm just going to make a quick comment. My brother Gene, if he remember, I'm sure he'll remember, he helped us interview M.S. King. We've had M.S. King on Blood River Radio two different occasions, and he did do the Bad War, and Gene did an excellent job on that. I'd just like the people to know that. You could always go in our archives. He was early on. Blood River's been on the air 26 months. So with that, and we did him early on in the air, but that was one of my favorite interviews, and I'm sure Gene's too. Go back to you, Miss Monica.
Oh, that's great that you had Mike King on, and he's written a number of other fantastic books as well. But, you know, Gene, when you talked about the Southerners, you know, just to replace Germany with the Southerners, absolutely. But I would go one step further and replace the word white people, the white race, you know.
Yes.
So really, that's who's under attack. And I think probably most of your listeners really do understand that. Now, let's just remind ourselves of the motto of the Mossad, that's, you know, Israel's equivalent, I guess, of their secret service. It's by way of deception, thou shalt make war. By way of deception, thou shalt make war. Now, if we really dig into the history of all these wars, the wars that you mentioned, they are all instigated by the Jews. It's just plain and simple. That is how it is. And they do it by lies. And you mentioned some of these, you know, how did they start the Vietnam War? How did they instigate all these wars? wars. It's through lies, through false flags, through, you know, and how do they get the Americans to even join in to World War II, for example, was through Pearl Harbor, and that was, you know, provoked. The Japanese were provoked, and then the Americans knew darn well that they were then coming. They basically, that was, you know, planned. They needed something to turn the tide of the American psyche. You know, they needed the Americans on board with going to this war across the ocean where they were going to lose a lot of people.
It was Roosevelt's lying to the American people and lying to the Japanese. The Japanese were trying to negotiate a way to get out of China. They'd stepped into a giant mess there, and they wanted the United States to negotiate a way to get out of that. Roosevelt slammed the door in their face. He lied to the officers, the naval officer, Admiral Kimmel, and General Short, the Army officer in Hawaii, and they were set up. And it's horrible that our own government would waste the lives of all those servicemen on those naval personnel and Marines on those ships and Army personnel around Pearl Harbor and on the islands there in Hawaii. And they were set up to get a war with Japan because Roosevelt knew if he got a war with Japan, he could get a backdoor war with Germany then and save his communist buddies. And that was the whole point of it. They didn't really care about what happened in the Pacific. They just threw the Marines out there and said, okay, you got to go across 6,000 miles of ocean with no support. Good luck. We're going
and
to
so
Europe.
What this all comes down to is the government is the enemy of the people, their own people, because both at Pearl Harbor and then we could go forwards to 9/11, which was actually the new Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
The government is in on this with the, you know, their Jewish advisors and whatnot, the tentacles of Israel, you know, that are advising the government, and they sacrifice an awful lot of American people, don't they now? So that's, you could say, for sure, that's an enemy of the American people.
Absolutely.
And these are deceptions that then sway the people into supporting war. And you're absolutely right. That was a war with Japan, and Japan was in an alliance with Germany and Italy. And so that was the backdoor way of getting into the war with Germany.
And a good friend of ours and a good friend of Blood River Radio, Buddy, in Arkansas, sent me a little pamphlet of Hitler's, the Chancellor of Germany, Chancellor Hitler's declaration of war against the United States. It was 38 pages, took, I think they said, about 80 minutes before the Reichstag. And out of those 38 pages, 16 pages described all the things that Roosevelt had done to Germany to try to provoke a war, and we, the Americans, the United States, were supposed to be neutral. They were firing American ships, naval ships were firing on German ships. They were selling arms to the British, violating our Neutrality Act left and right almost every day of the week, and yet the Germans had the foresight to say, no, we're going to just take it, whatever they're dishing out to us, because the Germans were smart enough to figure out they're trying to sucker us into a war. That's exactly what Roosevelt's trying to do.
And Hitler did not want war. You see, what we all learned in school is that he just wanted war. He wanted to take over the world. We basically learned the opposite of what really happened. And it is documented, it's clear in the historical record that he did everything possible to prevent war, to not have war. It's just basically the opposite. And the MS King is really good on that there. Anyway, I hear the music.
Miss Monica, hang on, please.
Yes.
Eugene, we're getting ready to transition to the second hour, and I'd like, if you can, to hold on at least for one more segment in the second hour so we can give this attention all it needs. This is the subject all the attention needs. People, if you will, hold on. We're going to continue this conversation as soon as we come back from the break. We'll be transitioning into the second hour. Be right back, folks.